Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. This is Jason Troyer.
And Joe Scott.
Filling in for Bob Vanyard, who is America's most popular, self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. Well, there's a lot of interesting news today. Colorado news, John Mark Carr is released and then rearrested again, heading to California for misdemeanor child pornography charges.
Maybe.
Now, I don't understand how you can get misdemeanor child pornography charges. Every child pornography charge of any kind, if you associate with them, if you help out, if you distribute, if you produce, every one of those is a felony. There should be absolutely no question.
They should be worrying about their life the minute they're noticed.
Absolutely. And so this misdemeanor child pornography charge, I don't know exactly what he's charged with because the guy's just creepy. Now, we have some friends in the Boulder County Jail. And saw him on Friday, John Mark Carr, shaving his arms. Now, I understand if you're a swimmer and there's a drag coefficient on the hairs of your arms and your legs, but the guy is just sitting in prison.
Well, he looks to me like he's trying to be a girl anyway.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
And in his mind, girls don't have hair on their arms. But look, Jason, what's there?
You have hair on your arms.
Yes, I do.
It's not as defined as a man, but you know what? Women have hair on their arms, too.
Yeah.
But the thing is, one thing that amazes me, first of all, he's a weirdo that he's shaving his arms. And the second thing is, what is he doing with any kind of razor in jail? This guy is absolutely certifiable nuts. And he has a razor, even if it's a disposable razor, a safety razor, whatever you want to call it, in jail. That's just crazy.
I thought that he was segregated from the general population.
He is. Yeah, but
yeah.
He could slash
they
his own wrist.
They still gave him, well, of course.
I want to be with JonBenet. I'm going to go see her now and start slitting his wrists. He's nuts. He should be on suicide watch. And
I thought he was when he first got here on suicide watch. At least that's what I heard on the radio. Who knows if it was true or not.
And I've been arrested for doing pro-life work and for talking too loudly while standing on a public sidewalk. They confiscate my shoelaces when they arrest me to go into jail. And yet they give this guy who was suspected of murder, who's suspected of child pornography. They deported him from halfway around the globe, and they stick him in a cage, and they give him a razor.
Now, maybe, you know, I know someone pretty well who was put in a mental institution and said he was a danger to himself and to society.
Yeah.
Just happens to be my husband. Hi, Ken. And they left him with his shoelaces. Maybe they're trying to kill off these nuts.
You know, well, but the thing is, you know, when I'm talking to the intake personnel there at the jail, and, you know, I'm coming from church because a lot of times the holidays are on a Sunday, so we have like an Easter holiday abortionist home visit.
Right.
So we go to the abortionist home, and we talk too loudly on the public sidewalk.
Shame.
He can rip the arms and legs off of little baby boys and girls, but if I talk too loudly, oh, well, we can't accept that. And so I go to jail. And so I'm a fairly big person, so my dress shoes, the shoelaces will not support my body weight.
They couldn't.
So I couldn't hang myself. What am I going to do with it? And so,
sure.
And I'm telling this to the intake officers. Well, you know, standard procedure, da 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 da. So they stick me in this holding cell, whatever, and I'm standing next to a wife beater. And so I ask him what he's in for as well. You know, I didn't do anything, of course. And so I'm preaching to him that his life has hit rock bottom and he needs to find a way to lift himself up from that rock bottom status. And the only way to do that is to turn to your Creator and to ask for forgiveness. And so the officers outside, they hear me preaching to this guy and they're giving me paperwork and okay, we're finishing up your paperwork. And they give me a staple in my paperwork. And they said, now normally we can't give you a staple or a paper clip in your paperwork, but we think you're okay.
Oh, my goodness. They figured you wouldn't stab yourself in the eye with it or whatever.
You know, it's so ridiculous. All right. So, John Mark Carr, do you have anything you wanted to add to John Mark Carr and this whole ridiculous situation?
Well, the only thing I would like to say is somebody please put him away for a long time. I don't care who it is, but this man does not belong back out on the streets. He's a danger to any child out there walking.
Yeah, and he was shuffled around from school to school all around the country, and it happens continuously because the school system needs teachers or teacher's assistants, whatever, school guidance counselors. And so these people, show up at schools and they start teaching and there's complaints. And what happens when there's complaints? Well, the teachers' unions don't want their teachers to be fired. So it's much easier just to tell the teacher, if you go away quietly, we won't say anything. You may or may not have molested three or four little girls, but if you just leave quietly and don't
They shuffle them.
Yeah.
They also shuffle them. There's a place called the Rubber Room where they put teachers and pay them, where they sit at desks all day and do nothing.
In New York City. Yeah. And so they take all the teachers that have complaints outstanding against them and stick them in the Rubber Room, as you said, in New York City. Mm-hmm. And they just twiddle their thumbs there.
And get paid.
And continue to get paid. It's absolutely atrocious.
Bureaucracy at its best.
And you wonder why Friday on the show, you and Danielle condemned public schools,
right.
Government schools. It's just one other thing. And even if the public schools weren't full of child molesters and child predators, they still don't teach godly principles. So do you really need the school violence? Do you need the predators there? Do you need low academic standards? You need all of that to help convince you that public schools are a bad idea.
Plus, and then add John Mark Carr to the mix, and you've got just a center for perversion and indoctrination into filth.
All a Christian needs to know is that the government has no business educating your child. And then you'd think, on principle, they would say, oh, I'm responsible for educating my child, and do I want to send my Christian young person, or do I want to raise them in a Christian family and send them to a godless education system? And I love Bob's analogy of, do you think the Israelites would put their kids on a chariot and send them to the
Egyptians,
to the Egyptians, or to the Philistines to raise them, to go to school there? And do you think God would be happy if the Israelites put their kids on the chariot school bus to go over to the Philistines to be educated? Of course not. God would have been furious.
He is.
And do you think God is furious with the Christian parents today who send their kids into public school and say that these kids are going to be salt and light?
Just look at Jeremiah 10. It says, learn not the way of the heathen. What else do you have to learn in the public school?
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of learning going on there, but not
just
a lot
the way
of
the heathen.
Yeah, not academic learning, but they learn so many other things. So, all right, so today is the one-year anniversary of the disaster of Katrina, and the disaster continues today.
Now, with Ernesto lurking in the
ocean
someplace.
But that's only Florida. This isn't, we're not talking about black New Orleans or chocolate New Orleans. I'm sorry.
Ooh, Jason.
So, you know, and it's just, it's amazing when you see the footage over and over again. And, of course, they're pulling that all out. And it absolutely was a tragedy. And no one is denying that. But people die in tragedies, and there's hardships in tragedy, thus the term tragedy.
Right. But, Jason, why set the tragedy to start all over again? Why why rebuild this tragedy waiting to happen?
Are you saying we learned nothing from the first Katrina?
Yeah, no, we did. We did. We learned how to throw money away. That's what we learned.
Yeah. And, you know, there's watchdog groups out there that are citing how much is being spent on this and that, and we're definitely going to get to that later in the program. But there is so much government spending out there, no one is keeping track of it. And there are about 31 states that got money from Katrina relief.
Now, and how many states did it hit?
Well,
it hit Florida, Mississippi.
Yeah, exactly. Florida, Mississippi, maybe some Alabama in there,
yeah.
Louisiana, of course. But, and I'm skipping ahead a little bit, but one of the contracts we're going to talk about a little later, let me see if I can find this. Yes, Memphis. The Public Building Service paid Memphis Goodwill Industries $537.04 for janitorial services to pressure wash sidewalks and parking lots in Memphis, Tennessee. That was Katrina relief. Now, $537, not a big deal, but why Memphis, Tennessee, do they get money to power wash sidewalks and parking lots?
I don't know.
And it's from the janitorial services of Goodwill Industries. So these are homeless guys out there with power washers, I would imagine. And do you really think they, you know, did a good job? Probably not. So these are people who don't want jobs generally. So
that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. So,
and that's just one place. Imagine how many other places got their $531.
Yeah, well, Colorado, we got around $30 million.
For what?
So there's three companies in Colorado that got $30 million. Now, why do Colorado companies get $30 million for Katrina relief? Well, it's engineering firms, basically, and that the three companies are. One was hired to do trash removal. So they got
in
Louisiana and
in
Mississippi,
okay,
and so forth. But these are the engineers, the smart executives work here, and so they subcontract out and so forth and so on in the disaster area.
Well, that
area
was needed. You had to remove the debris and the trash and then all the disease-causing things that were on the ground.
Is that a government job?
No.
Okay. So the government should not contract, and there could be an argument for that because the government needs to protect the health of its citizens. And so if there are pools of water and there are mosquitoes that are forming and there is rotting animals and rotting plants and rotting trees and just disease festering, there is an actual need for the government to step in and clean that up. But what we have done is so far and above that it's absolutely unbelievable. And the people in Colorado, the people in Iowa, the people in Indiana, the people in Alaska, the people in Hawaii should not have to pay one penny for Katrina. Now, they can certainly give to charities, and that's the way God intended it. God intended us to help our neighbors. God did not intend for us to give money to the government so the government could come in our name and say, we're going to help you.
Well, God didn't intend for us to be robbed to give money to Katrina, and that's what's happening when the government comes and takes money from us for something that's totally uninvolved with government or should be. That's robbery.
And there's a few facets that I want to talk about. The first one is that Christian relief organizations, Samaritan's Purse, and even Pat Robertson's Operation Blessing, they are the ones, and Operation Save America, which of course we know very well, those are the organizations that should go into these disaster areas. Not that they should be working on power lines or whatever, but feeding the people and working on housing for the people. It's these Christian organizations that should be doing that. But because we are giving all this money to the government in the way of taxes so that they can provide these services, we don't have money as citizens to provide, to give to
the charities.
The charities, yes,
yeah,
absolutely. And so what happens when the government steals from us? Well, we can't give to our brothers. We can't
right.
to our sisters in need. And so, and of course, the atheists and the Democrats, they love this because not only are they showing that the government is needed, the government is wanted in those areas, and we can't do without our government big brother helping us, but they're also keeping the Christians out. Because when the Christians give you a sandwich and they say Jesus loves you, they freak out about that. That's a worse disaster than the hurricane hitting
land. Well, not only that, though, Jason, by the government coming in and cleaning up Mississippi, Louisiana, and those things, it teaches the Christians, the untaught Christians in the churches, that the government is supposed to do that.
Absolutely.
Because most churches are not teaching them that it's not the government's job, it's their job, and it's just easy. The flesh wants to lay back and do nothing anyway.
Sure. And when you have a house in Mississippi that's destroyed, you have trees in your yard, you have your neighbor's house sitting on your property, and the government comes in and they fix that. They remove the house or they remove the trees, they give you a tarp to put on your roof. You should be thankful for the help that you receive.
Right.
And so how do you separate that? The government shouldn't be doing this anyway.
Well, that's
but I
not
need to be
free.
Thankful.
You know, when
exactly.
the government comes in and removes the house out of your backyard and the tree off of your house, it's not free, although you feel as though it is.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of the country is, you know, just quaking under the weight of all the taxes that it's taken to pay for this.
And that argument could be made for health care as well. Well,
exactly.
We need free health care in America. Well, you know what? Doctors and nurses can't work for free. They need to provide a living for their family. They've worked very hard and acquired a huge amount of knowledge, and they need to be compensated for the amount of labor that they have put in learning all the bones of the body and all the internal organs and all of this. They need to be compensated for that. So if we can't say there's free health care, because there's no such thing as free health care.
That's right.
The government does not Well, our government produces money, but
and that's true. they print their own.
Exactly. But the government doesn't have money of its own. It gets its money from the people.
When it's not printing its own, you're right,
exactly.
Jason.
So, yeah, there's so many rabbit trails to go on.
I know. I was just thinking like four of them. Like doctors were driving doctors right out of their own practices because of the regulations, the government regulations, yeah. and the paperwork. That's another rabbit trail.
We started on Katrina, then went to national health care, and now we're on the Federal Reserve System. So, yeah. Holy cow. All right, let's go back to health care and finish that up. But the government has no money of its own, so it has to take money from its citizens to pay other citizens to provide that health care, which is ultimately why Hillary's health care plan doesn't work, because
right.
it turns it in to socialized medicine, and then the doctors can't get paid as much. When you have a doctor making $200,000, he's a specialist, and he can save your life. But you tell him, well, now because of socialized medicine, you can only make $70,000.
Is he going to work as hard?
Exactly.
Is he going to pursue his career the way he was when the end of his financial gain was open?
Yeah. He might go through med school and say, well, $70,000, that's a good amount of money. I really want to help people out. And he has that altruistic mindset about him. And so he might be a general practitioner. But is he going to be a cardiologist? Is he going to specialize in these very intricate, very specialized techniques that can save somebody's life? He's not going to do that because $70,000 is the ceiling. Sure. And he can go out and do private business somewhere else and make more than $70,000 because he's been in school for however long. You know, he graduates high school, goes to college, then goes on to medical school, and then he does residency, and he does all of this. And, wow, $70,000 for that, I must well be a lawyer. You know, lawyers make more than that. So
the schooling is cheaper,
too. You don't have to mess with blood.
That's right.
So, all right, let's get back to Katrina. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the contracts that were handed out. And so a few of the contracts, I want to talk about some of the contracts of interest, just the small little things that popped up. And then I want to talk about Phillips and Jordan. Now, who's Phillips and Jordan? Who cares? It's just one of the many people that got Katrina-related contracts. And there is a whole list of them that you can look up. And then I want to talk about Kellogg, Brown, and Root.
Okay.
And who are Kellogg, Brown, and Root? Well, Kellogg, Brown, and Root is better known as KBR. And KBR is better known as Halliburton.
Right.
So and of course, Halliburton is the favorite whipping boy of the left. So I want to talk about those two companies in particular. Not that there's anything special about those two companies, but I want to talk a little bit about the contracts that they received. So Phillips and Jordan received 5 contracts, and Kellogg, Brown, and Root, Halliburton received 11 contracts. But let's talk about just the minuscule things. So the U.S. Geological Survey purchased 230 fire wires from CDW Government, Inc.
So fire wires, you mean the thing that, like, I would connect my computer to my camera and upload pictures, something like that?
That's what I got from this report. It says fire wires. So I looked on CDW, and they bought it from CDW Government, Inc. So CDW is a business/computer, not manufacturer, but distributor.
Retail.
And so you can go to CDW.com and see all the accessories. You can buy computers there and cables and this
so
and
could
that.
You connect, like, one computer to the other with a
exactly.
firewire?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's mostly for peripherals, so I don't even know why they had to buy 230. But they were buying tablet PCs, so maybe they wanted to hook up the tablet PCs if they had that kind of a connection. And a tablet PC is basically an electronic clipboard. It's a computer that you can kind of flip the screen around and use a pen, and you can write things down. So they can go out into the field, write down statistics, write down we need help here and there, and then they can take it back to the home office, maybe use a firewire to plug it into the network. So anyway, they bought 230 firewires. So I looked today, and a 14-foot firewire cable cost $23.29. So 14 feet, that's quite a distance, because
mm-hmm.
when you're, you know, usually, you know, 5 feet will do the job. But I picked the longest one that they sold, which is the most expensive. So 23, so call it $25. Well, how much do you think the government spent per firewire cable?
Well, I know recently I bought one. I had to pay $50 because I had no idea this website. I will take note.
So the government paid $216.40 per firewire cable.
You're kidding.
Yeah. So
who did they pay it to? You, no way of knowing, right?
CDW Government Inc. That's who they purchased it from.
For $250 a firewire.
Well, they purchased 230 firewires for $216 per firewire cable for a total cost of $49,000.
Wow.
In that range.
Don't you wish you had that many firewires, huh?
That's, yeah, it's amazing.
Sale?
And, okay, they had to pay a premium. They wanted it in a hurry. Okay, that's understandable. It's a disaster. We have to get it there. They don't need it at all because they shouldn't have been doing the disaster relief that they were doing. Now, certainly the government has a responsibility to protect its citizens. And I thought it was fantastic that we have the technology to fly helicopters over rooftops and pluck people off. I am all for the government doing that. That is a great expense, but I am willing to absorb that. And I think the principles are such that the government should rescue its citizens. Now, if they put themselves in a continual dangerous situation, if every year we have to pluck people off the rooftops in New Orleans, then the government should stop doing that.
That's right.
But if it's an unforeseen danger and the people are trapped, and of course in Colorado we have people that get lost in the mountains and we mount rescue efforts to try to find them. But what's happening in Colorado, if a skier skis out of bounds, meaning that he goes off on his own because he wants the fresh powder that nobody skied on before, and then he gets lost, there's legislation that we want the skier, the snowboarder, whoever, to pay back the cost of his rescue.
Right.
And he should be happy to pay back the cost of his rescue.
Now, that sounds a little kind of funny. If a skier goes out of bounds, which means he's off into territory where he can cause an avalanche
mm-hmm.
and kill himself. He's not just going off a path. He's off in the backwoods, and there's good reason why you shouldn't be back there, and there are people that know what they're doing, that know what causes avalanches. And
that's why they mark it off.
That's why they mark it off. And then a skier goes, it costs thousands of dollars to rescue him, and sometimes more than one life. You know?
Absolutely, because rescuers, while they're going through the snow and doing this and that, they could cause an avalanche.
Exactly.
They could kill themselves. They could take many people with them. So the rules are set up there for safety. But in Katrina, while they should have known that a city that was built below sea level was in danger of flooding.
Oh, come on, Jason.
I know.
How?
Well, they built levees, so that there's an indication that we need to stop the water from pouring into the city. But I really am all for picking people off of rooftops, going in with the boats with the big fans on the back and no motors in the water and kind of skimming the water and trying to rescue people. That's fantastic. And I don't want to say just because I like something it's right, but I think it's a principled argument that the government needs to rescue its citizens if possible, whether that's even extraordinary lengths like helicopters or driving boats in there to rescue people, that sort of thing. But where do we draw the line? Do we give everybody $2,000 in a FEMA credit card to go and buy big screen TVs, to buy lottery tickets, to buy alcohol?
Go to strip clubs.
Yeah.
They found a lot of money showing up in the strip clubs, which is sad.
And the casinos, of course, started to come back. They were the first businesses to come back. Not the bread and milk stores, not the generator stores, but it was the casinos that were the first ones to come
mm-hmm.
back. And so, because everybody's sitting there with $2,000 and nowhere to shop. So
nowhere to shop, they go to the casino.
They have to swoop in. So, it's just amazing the lengths that people go to look compassionate as a government. And certainly I felt compassion for these people, but when you misdirect that compassion, it ruins people and it ruins lives and it will ruin your government. Now, if I wanted to give my money to help someone in Katrina and in disaster relief, there are avenues for me to help. And, of course, people were beating the drum for American Red Cross and Salvation Army and Christian organizations besides those two, which generally aren't anymore. But there are many avenues that I could help those people out. And, of course, we know Pastor Bill Shanks down in the New Orleans
right.
areas. So we could have a personal connection. And so not everybody has that personal connection, but they can give money nationally. But the government should not swoop in and do that.
Right. And a lot of individual churches from all over the country sent teams to just go down and dig mud out of some houses. You know, there were a lot of Christians donating a lot of time.
And we're throwing money at the problem hand over fist. And I was recently down in New Orleans. This was mid-July. And I was talking to a friend of mine who was removing mold from houses. And it's a constant thing. I went with another friend of mine to the lower ninth ward. Mm-hmm. We drove around. There's weeds everywhere because people are not returning. They've gone to Houston, and that was where the big influx of people went. But there are people all around the country that are not returning. So there are houses that are just abandoned and absolutely gutted. People have come in and just pulled every little piece of copper pipes out
of
there.
Anything salvageable, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Because these people are not coming back to their homes, and so it's just a shell anymore. Mm-hmm. And so we throw all this money at it, and nothing really happens. And so a year later, there are homes in the lower ninth ward that will never be built again.
Is the city giving them some kind of time limit to come, or are they going to demolish the homes?
Yes, and that's one of the pieces of legislation that's going on down there. But the point I want to make is that those homes should not be rebuilt because they know it's a dangerous area. And for a long time, there were no homes in the lower ninth ward because, well, it's lower. And so they know that's where the flooding is going to occur, if any place.
Well, obviously the homeowners don't want to come back.
Yeah, exactly. And so, but there's valuable real estate there because it's so near New Orleans, and people want that property. And people, but if they want to take that risk, fine, take the risk. Live in a dangerous area if you want. Build in a dangerous area if you want. But don't expect the government to come in and save you.
What if they do rebuild in the lower ninth quarter?
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to insure them?
Well, and that's the thing. If you're privately insured, fine, but don't expect the government to bail you out. And that's what I meant just a minute ago when I said the government rescue you.
Right.
I still think the government should have a duty to help people, get them out of the disaster area, but they don't have a duty to get them new homes and all this stuff. So we're going to talk a little bit more about Katrina, but the Denver audience is sadly leaving, so we're going to do this on the web and in Iowa for the rest of the time. But we do need your help, so give us a call. Welcome back to Bob and You're Alive. This is Jason Schroyer.
And Joe Scott.
Sitting in for Bob, who is vacationing. He's up in Canada, clear-cutting redwood forests up there, as any good conservative would do on his vacation. So we wish him well, and timber, Bob. All right. Now, as I said before we went to the break, we do need your help here to stay on the air. Airtime is not free, and we want to do a good job while Bob is gone and encouraging people to support the ministry. We don't want to neglect that because we do need to keep this ministry going. We need to keep the radio show going. So if you want to give us some help, if you want to sign up for the monthly sermons, for the Bible studies, for the products that we have, the many videos that we offer, give us a call, 1-800-836-9278, 800-8-AND-YARD.
Help us to find the liberal and the conservative.
Absolutely. And if you like us, please support us. If you don't like us, you can use that same number and say we're crazy and we're uncompassionate and we're just mean-spirited people who have no compassion for those poor people that survived Hurricane Katrina. And we're talking about Hurricane Katrina because it's been 1 year.
And today.
Yeah. And I was in New Orleans about a month ago, and nothing is fixed. There's quite a few things that are they're working to be fixed, but there's so much mold removal, and just businesses are in shambles down there. And we've been throwing money after money after money. And I don't know what the total cost of Katrina is because it's hard to keep track of that. So we'll see if we can get a number for that, but it's absolutely astronomical, and any number we throw out will be wrong. So 40 million, we're talking billions.
Billions, yeah.
So 60 billion, 100 billion, who knows what. And is that going to be just the government's cost, or is that all of Katrina relief? It's such a massive project that we just keep throwing money at that we have absolutely no idea what's going on down there. Now, we do have some more contracts that I wanted to bring up because, as I say, we just throw money at the problem. And we were mentioning before we went to the break about the chief financial officer at the Department of Agriculture. He purchased a computer.
Yeah, you never mentioned how much that computer cost. I mean, if they can charge $250 or $216 for a FireWire?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a computer, it's just, you know, for the wire, it's $260 per FireWire. And for the computer, so he got an HP, just a Hewlett-Packard C120 laptop computer, executive leather case, that might be a bit extravagant, but okay, travel battery, USB diskette drive. Who uses a diskette drive anymore?
I don't know.
Oh, my goodness. You'd think the federal government would have enough money they could get CDs by now, but they're still using diskette drives, apparently, and an HP docking station. So the purchase, how much do you think that computer, that laptop cost?
$5,000.
That's a pretty expensive computer. But no, it was $25,000.
Oh, my.
For what I just
For how many?
There. Just one.
Just one?
Yeah.
No, but how many did they purchase? Just
oh,
one?
Oh, yeah. It just says that the chief financial officer at the Department of Agriculture, that was his.
Now, this isn't
so it had
like
to be a
a
really nice computer.
This isn't doesn't have a tower. It's a laptop, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's not a supercomputer, servers, and on all this. So it's amazing. All right. So a few more things. The Federal Supply Service, whatever that is. Apparently, they make really stupid purchases because there's a whole list of things they purchase. So they purchased a pizza cutter with a 4-inch blade. Now, why you need a pizza cutter down there when you have no ovens to cook the pizza and it's just volunteer people and charities coming down there to feed these people? But they bought a pizza cutter with a 4-inch blade for how much do you think a pizza cutter would cost?
Well, you can get them at the dollar store, dollar.
Yeah, so, yeah, 99 cents. Well, they paid $27 for a pizza cutter.
Pizza cutter. Sterling. Sterling.
So, all right, so FEMA purchased 20-foot by 100-foot blue sheeting rolls with the FEMA logo on them. So 20-foot by 100-foot, that's a pretty big sheet of plastic.
It's like a blue tarp.
Yeah, that they would put on roofs to seal the roofs, things like that. Well, and of course, that's just temporary until they get the roofs repaired. Well, and why in the world do you need a FEMA logo on the tarp?
It's good advertising. Why does FEMA need advertising? I don't know.
So it's you just get some blue tarps, and you got to have a lot of them, no doubt about it. But they spent $6.6 million of our money to buy temporary blue tarps with their logo on it.
Unbelievable. How many houses can you cover? The entire state, I would imagine.
But then you got to pay somebody to haul the tarps away afterwards.
That's so true.
It just goes on and on and on. All right. So the Federal Supply Service purchased a filing cabinet from Configuration Incorporated.
A regular filing cabinet.
A filing cabinet. That's all it says, just a filing cabinet. Now, you would think with the hurricane, they could just find a filing cabinet on the side of the road, stand it up straight,
and start using it.
Because
yeah.
No one's going to be able to identify their files or anything like that. Well, the Federal Supply Service paid $583.
Wow.
And 76 cents.
Made out of mahogany or cherry wood or something. Who knows?
I think it has an automated arm on the top of it that takes the files off of your desk
and files them
automatically for you for $583.
Wow, should be able to do that.
So the same company, the Federal Supply Service, purchased a pastry decorating tip set with 10 tubes and 5 sets of different sizes for a total of $54.
Cake decorating.
Pastry decorating.
Why did they do that? Why do you think they even needed that?
Well, are they decorating cakes in the hurricane zone? I mean, these people just need food. They need water, rice and beans. Just get them nourishment.
They're not decorating cakes for the people. They're decorating cakes because they hit their cush job and they know it.
That's probably it. They threw a party for themselves. So,
yeah.
All right. One last thing from the same Federal Supply Service. They purchased 3 steak knives described as scimitars, which is basically a curved steak knife from what I gather. So how much do you pay for a curved steak knife? You know, it's not a long sword. It's not a machete. It's just a steak knife.
Steak knife's 4-inch blade.
Yeah. How much would you
and
pay for
curved,
one of those?
So maybe you have to go to a fancy store to get it. I don't know. $10.
$10. Well, I tell you, you should be doing some shopping for the federal government. They paid $92 a piece for the knives.
Well, I hope they're cutting something good.
Well, they're cutting the cake. They got to have something to cut that cake. You know, you make a cake in a disaster area, you need a steak knife in order to cut it.
But they had
That's why they
got to
cover it with the frosting, and they got to decorate it really nice so nobody knows how it tastes.
They had a pizza cutter, Jason. They didn't need the knife.
Ah, that's true. They had the pizza cutter. All right, so I want to talk a little bit about the big contracts, not just the pizza cutter for $27 or the steak knives for $92, but these are the multi-million dollar contracts. So let's talk about Kellogg Brown and Root. So KBR, which many people don't know, but that is Halliburton. Mm-hmm. That's a division of Halliburton. And, of course, Halliburton is the favorite whipping boy of the left, and Halliburton is making all this money in Iraq. But they seem to be making money in America as well. So let's see if it was justified, if they're actually providing a valuable service, and if they're just if the government is wasting our tax dollars. So Halliburton, they had 11 contracts. So let me read you. I'll rattle off the value of each of the contracts of the 11. So contract number one, $15 million, then $12 million, $10 million, $7.8 million, $34 million, $33.5 million, $10 million, $7 million, $9 million, $33 million, and $6.5 million. That's a lot of million.
It's a lot of million, but they're not hundreds of millions like I expected you to say.
Yeah. So, but this is just one of the contractors of the many that you can find online. You can see how much they spent supposedly because this is all public information. And so we did our best to try to find out what happened in the disaster area. And of course, who really knows, because it is a disaster area. But let's see what the federal government spent the money on. So contract number one was $15 million, and that was for unwatering activities in plaque mines in East and West Basins, New Orleans.
So that's for pumping water.
Exactly.
In New Orleans. It's a federal contract?
It's a federal contract, yeah.
Federal government's not supposed to be doing that.
Absolutely not. I shouldn't pay for flood damage to someone else's house. It just shouldn't happen. Now, if the city of New Orleans says we have to restore our city, and the people, the taxpayers there in the city said, yes, we want to restore
our community
infrastructure.
Yeah.
We want to make our community livable again, and we want to rebuild the levees, and we want to pump the water out and all of this, that's fine if they want to do that. But don't take my money from Colorado or anyone listening in Iowa or Alaska or Hawaii or wherever else and to pump the water out of New Orleans. Now, the reason they have to do that is because the disaster is so huge that they can't
The local government can't afford it.
Yeah, they can't tax their own people to fix the problem,
yeah.
Which means that that city is not livable. And
right. There's a good reason for it not being livable.
It can't sustain itself.
That's right.
And so if you can't sustain itself, it should go out of business. So how does a city go out of business? You don't live there anymore.
You don't rebuild.
Yeah. And if you want to, as a private citizen, go in and rebuild, that's fine. But the city should either let the water recede naturally, or with the levees broken, it probably won't recede naturally. Then you have to tax your citizens in order to rebuild the infrastructure. So $15 million to Halliburton, complete waste of money. And I don't hate Halliburton. I do because of this one contract, but I don't hate Halliburton because they're a big, successful company. And I don't begrudge them because it was a no-bid contract, because Halliburton, because it is so huge, it is one of the few companies that is able to do these types of jobs. And so when you only have two or three companies in the country and even in the world that are capable of doing this or providing services in Iraq, then you pay what they say you pay, and you
right.
try to negotiate with them. But if you want their services, they don't have to do what you say just because you're the government. They're a private organization, and they can set a price. They can say, I will do this job for X amount of money, And if the government says yes, then fine. The government can say yes, and Halliburton can say, I don't want to do it for less than this, or I don't want to do this at all.
Right. They're in business to make money, and yeah. that's what they should be.
Yeah. But the principle is, should the government pay any company to do this?
Mm-hmm.
And no, they shouldn't. Now, Mayor Nagin down in New Orleans, he could have paid Halliburton $15 million to pump out his city if that's what the citizens wanted to rebuild the infrastructure, but that's neither here nor there. All right. Contract number two is awarded by the Department of Defense for $12 million for emergency construction capabilities contract for Hurricane Katrina stabilization and recovery at Naval Air Station Pascagoula, Naval Air Station Gulfport, Stennis Space Station, Space Center, and other naval installations in the southeast region. The work to be performed includes the re-roofing of most buildings, barracks, debris removal from the entire base, water mitigation, mold mitigation, interior and exterior repairs to most buildings, waste treatment plants, and all incidental related work.
Well, that's not bad. That's not even a bad price, Jason. We have to keep our military bases up and running. That's part of the safety of the country, and that is the federal government's job.
You're absolutely right. I do not begrudge the federal government or Halliburton, KBR, for spending the $12 million to rebuild the bases, because they absolutely need to be rebuilt. That is a duty of our country to defend us. And so we do have enemies in South America and, of course, Cuba. And so you need Navy bases and you need bases in general down in the south of America. And so that's fine.
And they need to be in good repair.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's go on to contract number three. Contract number three was for $10 million emergency construction capabilities contract for Hurricane Katrina stabilization and recovery at the Naval Support Activities New Orleans. So, okay. So New Orleans gets their own contract. You have the Gulfport and Pascagoula naval stations, and then you have New Orleans also needs to be repaired for the Joint Reserve Base and naval support activities in New Orleans.
Okay. So, all right, it's not a bad amount.
Yeah, so $10 million for that. Okay. It's begrudging, but okay, I'm not too upset about that. So contract number four for $7.8 million, emergency construction capabilities contract for Hurricane Katrina stabilization and recovery at Naval Support Activities New Orleans, Joint Reserve Base New Orleans, and other naval – wait a minute. Didn't I just read that? Wait a minute.
I think so.
Contract 3 and Contract 4 are the same thing, except they have a different price. Oh, I get that.
They're separate contracts?
They're separate. The first one was for $10 million. The second one was for $7.8 million. So apparently somebody there at KBR can't do the math and had to get another contract for that. So that's $17.8 million for New Orleans. And, how much was it for
Don't think that's a really bad price.
Yeah, and $12 million. I mean, we're talking big numbers, and big numbers can scare you. But if you think about re-roofing and mold mitigation.
Bases, and there's a lot of stuff that has to go on at a base.
Yeah. All right, so contract, where are we at? Contract that was four that we just did. So contract five, KBR has been tasked to help plug levee breaches, demort, unwater, and planning and mobilization. These were four task orders on the contract worth $200,000, $14.2 million, $15 million, and $4.6 million. So, again, we go back to plugging levees and unwatering.
Mm-hmm.
The federal government should not be plugging the levees.
Right.
If the water is rushing in, then the city should take care of that. If the city can't take care of that, it is an unworkable situation.
So this particular contract is for the city, not for a base.
Yes, this is to plug the levee breaches, demort, whatever that is, unwatering, and planning and mobilization. So that was $200,000, $4.2 million, $15 million, and $4.6 million.
They're mobilizing the levees?
I don't know. Mobilizing the levees.
I don't know.
But, in the neighborhood of $30 million there, I think. Well, let's check the master list here. Contract 5, $34
million. Okay.
So the Army Corps of Engineers for FEMA gave them that contract. So that was a waste of money. So contract 6, the Department of Defense, $33.5 million, a big one, for modification and rebuilding bases New Orleans and Gulf Coast.
What?
That was, well, it looks like it's the same thing as contract 2, 3, 4. Yeah, so it was originally.
This is the fourth contract for the same bases.
Yeah, it looks like it. So $29.8 million so far. When you add the $33.5 million, you're looking at $63.4 million to repair.
Okay, the price is going up a little bit high now.
I mean, they could knock them down and start over. I mean,
are they giving different people? No, it's all Halliburton.
This is all KBR, a division of Halliburton that they're giving all these contracts to. So we're up to $63.4 million to repair Army bases, and it looks like there was only three or four places to rebuild. So got contract 7 awarded October 7th, 2005 by the Department of Defense, $10 million for modification to rebuild bases, New Orleans and Gulf Coast.
No kidding.
All right, we'll slap another $10 million on that, so we're up to $73.4 million. Contract number 8 awarded September 8th. 2005 by the Army Corps to Brown and Root, KBR. The contract is valued at $7 million and is for a DHS, Department of Homeland Security, support facility in New Orleans.
I don't think that belongs there.
Yeah, that, you know, Department of Homeland Security, I mean, we're not getting a lot of immigrants, and the drug dealers are coming from, like, in the Miami area, and there's a huge facility there. So,
they're not coming to the disaster area.
Yeah. And, you know, Department of Homeland Security really and FEMA is part of that, I guess. That's the way it works. But setting up a $7 million support facility in New Orleans does not seem like something the federal government should be doing. I'm all for the Department of Homeland Security. That's one of the few departments that we should have operating, but it just doesn't sound right.
A support facility for FEMA could be run out of the back of a truck. It doesn't need a $7 million building.
Well, if the FEMA support was as we believe it should be, then absolutely. You could run it out of the back of a truck.
An 18-wheeler thing, yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you have an office. Yeah. Or you rent some offices because a lot of the businesses are shut down. So you don't have to build a new facility. You can rent out a building or you can take over a building that's been abandoned. Because I'm sure there's so many buildings that were just abandoned and not returned to. So it's amazing. $7 million for that. So that was, it seems like a waste of money. Because after the disaster, the government has a responsibility to get the people out, and that's it. But this constant sustaining of the people, buying them trailers, the $2,000 credit cards, all of that, it's not the government's responsibility to do any of that. All right, contract number 9, $9 million for Hurricane Katrina stabilization and recovery at Naval Support Activity
You're
New
kidding.
Orleans, Joint Reserve Base, New Orleans, and other naval installations.
So they're just stacking one contract on top of another on top of another. So if someone looks and sees Halliburton's getting, like I thought, they're getting $10 million, even $30 million, that doesn't look like a whole lot. But this is adding up.
Yeah, we're at $82.4 million. We have two contracts to go. I hope it's for something different. All right, contract 10, November 17th. And this is 9 days later.
Mm-hmm.
Contract number 9 was November 8th. This is November 17th. So you would think that they could figure this out and they're going to need more money. So contract number 9 was for $9 million. And it was 9 days later that contract 10 was confirmed for $33 million. $82.4 million was not enough. They had to do $33 million for stabilization and recovery at Naval Air Station Pascagoula, NSA Gulfport, which is the Naval Air Station, Stennis Space Center, which I don't even know what Stennis Space Center is, but it doesn't sound like security to me, and other naval installations, southwest regions, including re-roofing, most building barracks, debris removal, all the same thing again. So we're up to 115.4.
All right, this is getting irritating. Even if the government doesn't know what it's doing, Halliburton knows what it's doing.
Oh, absolutely.
They're raking in the contracts like candy.
Contract 11, $6.5 million. Let's see. For Hurricane Katrina stabilization and recovery at Naval Support Activity.
Okay, that's enough. I've had it. That's got to be the end.
Oh, man. $129.9 million for...
The same thing.
The same thing, yeah. For picking up debris, re-roofing buildings, getting rid of mold, and, you know, it's
in
a big job.
In three locations?
Well, there was three locations in the Gulf Coast, and then it sounded like two locations in Louisiana.
These little incremental contracts? Halliburton's a big business.
I think you put your finger on it when you said it doesn't make news when it's $10 million. It's not that big a deal. And there were a few of them that were exactly the same amount. And so you'd think, oh, did I hear that last week? Oh, it must be the same thing. So maybe that's a way to disguise the cost. But I do want to share one bright spot, I thought, but it didn't turn out to be a bright spot. And this is actually pretty well reported, but I do just wanted to bring it up. John Shepherdson, who lives in Kentucky, saw the coverage on the news. So he went to his local big box store, bought 19 generators, then he rented a U-Haul and drove 600 miles down to the disaster area. So he wanted to make money. He wanted to help out, but yet still make money. He's a capitalist. He offered to sell his generators for twice what he had paid for them. But he drove 600 miles. He had to pay for fuel. He had to pay for their U-Haul. He had to pay for his time. So that's not a big deal. And if people want to buy them, great. If they don't, that's fine as well.
He's not forcing anyone.
People were eager to buy, but the police confiscated his generators.
Oh, my.
And he was in jail for 4 days for price gouging. And his generators sat in police custody.
So he lost his complete, entire investment. And people went without electricity.
Generators, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so we hear all this disaster going on down there. The Superdome was a whole other story, almost separated from Katrina.
Oh, yeah.
There were, you know, multiple murders and rapes and raping little kids.
So they said.
There. Yeah. So, but do you know how many people were actually killed in the Superdome? Can people out in the audience, do you remember how many people actually died in the Superdome?
I don't know, two.
Well, looking back, we can see 6 people died there, 4 of natural causes, obviously a very stressful situation.
Mm-hmm.
And the elderly and the sick were moved, and they should have kind of stayed where they were. They would have liked to. One died of a drug overdose. So, you know, too much heroin to try to get through the ordeal, and one suicide, no confirmed rapes of children or adults.
Wow.
So when you look at the problem, try to figure out the answer. Don't look to the government for the answer. You're going to see these sympathetic images, but look to the Bible to find out what is right.
Amen.